This is the final installment in the Moon is an Orange Triangle trilogy, a series which looks at families who live positively with autism. The first series looked at children, the second, teenagers, and this is part one of a three-part series which looks at adults. The Moon is an Orange Triangle, Series 3, Episode 3. Directed by Alison Toomey.
I'm convinced that every person with autism can contribute to society. Even those who are nonverbal and who have, let's say, young developmental age. And I'll give you just one story which inspired me a lot. A boy with autism, and one of his issues, his challenging behavior was, he loved the sound of breaking glass, and I'm not talking about the song here. I'm talking about whenever he saw a glass, he smashed it on the floor, and then, you know, he started to flap his hands. He loved it. Now, what do we do with a problem, an issue like that? The intuitive reaction is to try to start hiding all the glassware. And grandma said, I don't want you to bring him without warning me, so I can hide all my glassware. Now, what happens with a boy with autism who's so interested in the sound of breaking glass, and we start hiding glass and bottles? Well, he becomes the specialist in the world in detecting bottles from 5 miles distance. You know what I'm talking about. So the more you try to hide, the better he specializes in finding glasses. Give him the glassware. Of course, I know if we then give a bottle, he will smash it here, but try to think, can't we make a job of it? You can make a job of every challenging behavior. Where do we smash glassware? In the recycling bins. Okay, I do know, if you would give him a bottle and say, come, let's go to the recycling, that he will smash it over there. So what you do, you walk up with him there, then you take out one bottle, and together, physical help, you throw it in there. And the first time they did, he even jumped up higher because it even makes a more interesting sound. Now this boy, I'm going to make a long story short. We are now, after a couple of years, it took us a couple of years, this boy now is the one responsible in the neighborhood for the recycling. Because with his little trolley, because the problem was in the beginning that the parents only had two bottles. Unfortunately, they were not alcoholics. So he wanted more. So what they did is they rang at the neighbors. Don't have any empty bottles? Oh yes, here. And now he goes in the street, everybody puts their bottles out there, and he's not anymore the difficult boy, oh, watch out, he's there. He's now, oh, John, he's the one recycling the glass in the neighborhood. Nonverbal. Isn't that nice? Of course, now and then, there's a bottle that doesn't reach the recycle bin. But then again, don't you ever make mistakes.
In this series, I spend time with three main characters. Later in the programme, you will get to meet John and Norma Finn and their severely autistic son, Martin. And I travel to Cork to spend time with Stuart Nielsen, who was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome in 2009 at the age of 45. But first, here is Adam Harris, a young man with Asperger's, who founded the organisation As I Am. And I caught up with Adam at their first ever conference.
Adam, are you exhausted?
Getting there. Yeah, it's been a great day though, so it's been worth it all.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's not about winning a great event, it's about bringing this to the next level, and I think we'll do that, so I hope so.
You're phenomenal. I mean, the feedback from everybody, the whole thing's just organised so well. I mean, we're sitting here in this lovely sensory room with lights and lava lamps, and everything has just been thought of because, of course, you know what the needs are.
Indeed, and, you know, as I said, well, I suppose tried to help formulate the day and how it would work. Again, only a brilliant team puts this together because huge amount of logistics involved.
Yeah.
But I think what's really exciting is today was important because it not only gives people a great day out, it hopefully shows people that our organisation does listen. and that our organisation wants to hear you, and that if you come, you can be guaranteed we'll think about these things. So that's hopefully will give a lot of people confidence to get involved and to advocate for themselves, because that's what we're all about, giving people, whether it's family members, whether it's people with autism, a voice, because that should be how we decide autism policy. That should be how society understands autism. It shouldn't be definitions in a book. It should be what the community has to say. And for so long we've talked about autism, we've held events for about autism, but we've never done anything for autism, for people with autism, about people with autism, by people with autism. And that's what today is about.
It's a really new, interesting approach, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit
maverick.
Have
been saying. I mean, you're sitting here now and you're touching this lovely velvet blanket on your lap.
Yes.
And this is all totally acceptable behaviour here today. And it should be totally acceptable behaviour anyway.
I think this is a major... I think people with autism are one of the most misunderstood and excluded groups in society, and I don't think that's too radical a thing to say. And I think we have a duty now to actually bring this campaign to the next level and bring it beyond just talking about services, which we must discuss and we must continue to advocate for, but that we also need to have a much bigger discussion about a society and actually say we want people with autism, we need people with autism in our society, and that means we have to give people the supports that they need to be able to participate fully, and we have to be accessible so people with autism can have their voices heard.
I mean, Adam, as I am, this is your own organisation. You set it up. What age were you when you set it up?
17. It's not my organisation. It's the autism communities. And, you know, it tries to be a place where people affected by autism or who feel about autism in lots of different ways can find a safe space to have their voice heard. So we try and facilitate and we try and make sure that our positions and our policies are those of people with autism and their families. And it's an organisation that's all about advocating for people with autism to have the tools to reach their own personal potential, and also to have the self-advocacy skills to be able to do that, or the advocacy skills in case of families. And it's also an organisation about challenging society to actually consider the needs of people with autism more, challenge government to actually consider the real common sense that's needed in terms of how we provide services to people with autism, and also in terms of how we actually understand the case for supporting people with autism, that independence makes sense, giving people the power to have control over their own lives makes sense, and it also is cost effective. So it's an organisation with a simple mission, and that is that every single person with autism, and that said, every single person full stop, should have the opportunity to reach their own personal potential, whatever that might be. And that's what we're working to do for autism, because there's so many social barriers still there. You know, a part of an autism diagnosis isn't being unemployed or being bullied or you know, being isolated in your community. That's nothing to do with diagnosis. It's to do with how society responds to diagnosis. So we want to get society to think outside the box. I think Irish people are inclusive. I think we've shown that in recent years. But I think we have to give people the knowledge in order to be inclusive, and that's what we are. We try and be an information point and I suppose a champion and an encourager of people who want to make that little bit of a difference.
What's your quirky world like?
I don't really think about it a lot, to be honest.
Well, your mum told me you were very disorganised, and I couldn't believe it when I saw
what's
happening
today.
Yeah,
well, that's why I have Grainne. I had nothing to do with this.
That doesn't make sense.
No, I find
the day that's in it.
Yeah, I just showed up because I find organisation very, very difficult and very, very stressful.
Well, so how do you manage today? Help?
Yes, so I don't do any of the logistics for the organisation at all. And Grainne does everything for me, so she books all my trains and my hotels and
but
everything.
But you're able to impart all of that information to her? And
things
to
go wrong a lot.
Yeah.
So we've missed a couple of events because I'll have gotten the wrong train or my bags go missing all over the country. I always lose something, these sort of things. Probably one of the quirkiest things I do is I still stim quite a lot.
Yeah,
without even realising it. So if I'm out with my friends and I become quite excited, or if I'm sitting still, I do a little toe run on my thing.
Yeah.
But it's something
I've seen it yesterday.
You saw it yesterday.
Yeah. And I love that you don't try to hide it.
No.
Because it's being so open and honest about your way of expressing how you feel.
And we still see a lot of that, like, how do I stop this behaviour? Or, you know, and it's obviously about learning to manage it as opposed to stopping it. But so many, I always kind of grimace when I see, like, in a school or something, a teacher saying kind of quiet hands to someone
because
that's that person's way of coping. So it shouldn't be. It's like in school, I used to kneel on my chair.
Right.
And most teachers would be absolutely fine about it, but some had a big issue with it. But it's actually how I can, because I like the pressure, so I'm able to, if I sit on my desk like this, I'll get up again because I can't focus on what I'm doing. But just to try and conform to some sort of social norm that we don't even know where it really came from seems a bit bizarre.
Yeah. That's amazing, isn't it? So do you still need release every day, just to decompress a bit? Maybe go offside if things get very busy, sensory overload? What would you do?
Well, we work in a really cool office. So it's like a Google Start office. It's a place called Dog Patch Labs. So it's a co-working space, but it's really, really zany. And people can kind of do whatever they like. So, you know, it's very casual. And we've shared working spaces. So we have like breakout rooms, a games room. We have a big bean bag. So that's a really good space to be able to move around it. As well as that, what I tend to do in work is I'll do a number of tasks, and then I'll get up and I'll walk once around. We work in a big square building, once around the square building, and in that time I'll generally stim, and then I'm able to concentrate again. So that's kind of how I would.
And isn't it fantastic you can do that within your own working environment? If you're in a
That's why I don't think I'd hate to work for somebody else, I think, because it's really good.
What's your man doing now? He'd be like, what's he doing?
Yes, exactly. And that's one of the problems that we face all of the time in the workplace. And one of the big priority areas that we're trying to work with at the moment is HR managers, to try and get them to see that these little changes, again, are actually no big deal, and that they enable somebody to do their job. Like, I've worked with many like really well-qualified people who can do a job, and they can't get through a job interview because they don't make eye contact. So straight away they're written off, and we see them for their disabilities. But for people with autism, we never recognise that there's actually accessibility issues. Or if we do, the issue is because it's invisible, we can turn on and off when we want to recognise that it's an accessibility issue. And I think that's a difficulty. So we actually need people to realise that actually adapting the environment is as fundamental as having a wheelchair ramp outside the door, but it's as important for the person, you know.
Yeah. What do you think, Peter?
We all have needs, and none of the needs that people with autism have are specific autistic. They have the same basic needs, but the way you have to meet them and the way they express these needs can be different. But, you know, when you need to stim because you say, I need to empty my bucket, but it's full, I have the same. Probably it's different things that fill our bucket, but when you have a full bucket, you have a full bucket. So, and probably you do different things, but the need that there's a time for me to just step out and reload my batteries, don't we all have that need?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and therefore, that does not mean that we are all somewhere on the spectrum. It means we are all humans.
The example we always use is like in school, where a teacher might say, you know, okay, open your bag, take out your maths book, go to page 6 and answer questions 1-3.
Too many instructions.
Well, you've lost the person with autism at go to your bag, but you've also lost the kid who's looking out the window, and the kid who's having something that's going on at home that day, and the kid who was just, you know, drawing on their copy. So if you wrote them on the board instead, or you gave step-by-step instructions, it might take 5 seconds longer, but you'd actually keep people with you a lot longer, and it facilitates not just the person with autism, but the people who have other stuff going on in their lives.
You're so young and you've achieved so much. I can't even imagine what you'd like to do next.
I'm very happy where I am at the moment. I would like to, I think the role of a founder of an organisation is to steady the ship and move us in a very firm direction and in the right direction, and to secure the future of the organisation. Obviously that means in terms of personnel, in terms of programmes and in terms of funding. So that's a big challenge at the moment, to get that in place so that it moves beyond this garage project it already has, but towards an organisation that has a sustainable future, and also that if for whatever reason I wasn't to be there in the morning, that will always be there and that can stand on its own 2 feet. It's a little bit like you have a child and then it grows up, and that's what I'm just, suppose I'm trying to be.
Are you from a wobbler to a toddler?
Yes.
On again,
I hope so. I'm not going anywhere fast. I absolutely love everything I do. It's the greatest honour, and it's lovely to be able to hopefully give something back to the community as well. I always see myself being involved in this space because it's so important, and I feel a real sense of duty as well to actually speak up, especially for those who aren't able to.
Well, you know, that's good to hear, because you're doing such a remarkable job for people with autism. You really, really, you really are. And it's such a positive job. It's uplifting. It's the potential. You know, people have potential. Yeah. And you need to keep doing this. You really do. This is the feedback I've gotten today, that this needs to keep going. You know, the train has to keep going. Can't stop.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
You're going to stick with it.
We won't be stopping. We're going to keep going, and we're not going to stop until people with autism are fully included in society, and that every single person with autism has the opportunity to reach their own personal potential and has a voice in Irish life.
I want applause. Now, I do know there are people in the audience who don't like sudden noises, and applause can be rather disturbing for them. But it's all about empowerment. What I'm going to do is give you the power to cope with it if you suffer. Whether you have autism or not, it doesn't even matter. What you can do, and this is what I like about this conference, that it seems like I'm very critical, but I love all the adjustments that have been made in order to make it autism friendly. One of the things I love is that we all got earplugs. So you didn't have to say, I have autism before getting earplugs. So those of you who don't like applause, you can put in your earplugs now. Now, if you don't like earplugs, because I can imagine that some people say, I don't want to wear earplugs, they don't feel very well, they are those cheap ones, you know. yeah, I know, because earplugs can be quite expensive if you have the high-tech ones. But there are other ways to cover your ears. Just to give you an idea, those of you who don't want to use their earplugs, here are some alternatives that you can use. Okay? If you don't want to cover your ears, you can leave. We're going to have applause in about 1 minute. So if you think, I can't stand applause, but I'm sure, I believe in the strength of people with autism, that people with autism can stand applause. But the main thing about sensory issues is uncertainty and unpredictability. It's not a matter of overload of information. People with autism have no different thresholds for sensory stimuli. That's brand new in research. This study was published last week. We know that the biggest problem with sensory is the uncertainty, not knowing when it's going to come, the stimulus, how long it's going to take, how intense it's going to be. So, what if we could make applause controllable and predictable? Because it's all about control. You know, you don't suffer from something if you feel you're the boss, if you feel you're in control. And you all have control. You will have control because I will give you the control by making the applause predictable. Don't start yet. What we're going to do is we're going to have applause for 3 seconds because that's all I deserve. Not more. And I will visualize it. So the next slide is my conclusion. And you will be all so happy that you will give me an applause after the conclusion. But I will tell you when to start. And then you will see the 3 seconds of the applause gradually move in a visual way, so that you will know how long it will take, which means you know that you can put your fingers in your ears, not for the rest of the day, but only for the length of the applause. And try without, because I'm sure you can do without. Are you ready for the challenge? Yes, come on, let's make this work. I believe it can work. So, my conclusion, then I will show the next slide and say start, and it will all be predictable. Okay? My conclusion is, we should not aim at making people less autistic, but autistically happy. Thank you for your attention. Applause. Thank you.
Some comfort leading me going home. Laying on the bundle in the buying rain, and now it and now it off, and then you and he's.
You never know what can happen. Doors could open for Matty, really, you know, talking to the right people. When I mean with Robert Mazzell now, we ran into him last year down in Liston Grana, and he asked Matty up to sing it on stage, which we kind of couldn't believe that would happen, such a big band. And it was really, it was a big achievement for Matty.
It's huge, really, yeah. Isn't it? It's so generous of a band like Robert Mazzell and his band to say, okay, we're gonna get this young man up
exactly
on stage.
Because
the place is packed, it's their gig. So in the middle of it, they'll get Martin up, and we're hoping that's going to happen tonight.
Well, you know, we're hoping, I think. We have spoken to Robert's manager, Pat Kelly, and it's a really nice guy. So he knows quite a bit about Matt.
Yeah, yeah. So that I was chatting to Pat, and they're delighted to have him up on stage. It's not even that they're doing; they love to see him, and they love to get him up on stage, don't they?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's marvelous that the Martin gets chances, really, because he probably feels really good when he's up beside Robin Mazzella and the country things. He must feel really proud of himself, really, you know.
He does enjoy it, doesn't he?
Oh, he does really enjoy it. You can tell just, you know, he bounces up there like a little boxer, you know.
He doesn't need any help going up. He physically needs a bit of help.
Yeah.
Do you always walk him up, John? Yeah,
we just walk him up and you know, he knows when he's really, you can tell he's really looking forward to getting up there.
He loves it. Because the stemming and the swaying and, you know, the anxiety sort of, it goes the minute the music kicks in, doesn't
That's correct, yeah.
Even his facial expression looks different, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, he rocks a lot, you know, as soon as he gets the microphone in his hand, as soon as the music starts, the rocking stops, and he's really, he's listening so close to the music, and he knows exactly when to come in, and when to stop, and when to come in again, you know,
it's his release, isn't it? How many songs do you think he'll sing on stage tonight? How many did he do last year? Was it the one number?
Two
numbers.
Yeah. So.
And how is he when he comes, when you know he's finished and you get him and you bring him down off stage? Is he elated?
Well, he gets a great applause, like, you know, and people people wouldn't have seen Martin or heard Martin sing. And when the band or Robert would say, we have a young man that's going to sing a couple of songs off you, you kind of wonder where this young man is coming from. And then Martin appears, like, I think, surely it's not this young man that's going to sing it, you know. And then when he starts singing there, completely.
It's quite shocking, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that people are going, I didn't expect that now.
No.
Didn't think he could do that.
Lots of people come to us and they can't believe, you know, they think it's unreal.
Yeah. When they hear the voice.
Yeah, when they hear the voice, yeah.
Yeah, because they would have seen him in the hall, you know, before he was going up, before he'd get up on stage, and he could have been, you know, jumping about the place, moving about. And
he's just singing to himself around, you know, and somebody that wouldn't have heard him sing before, and even when we talk to lots of different bands and that, and if we say that Martin, you know, he's quite good at singing, they think, oh, well, you know, they look at him and they think, well,
that's a mammy and daddy saying that.
You know, this is they're just proud of the young fella, and they think, well, and then when they hear him sing, they think, wow, we didn't realise we could hear something like this.
I know. And when someone says, does your son want to sing today? You go to Martin then, and what do you say?
Well, just say Martin. You can sing, you know, Martin singing. We use Martin at the beginning of every sentence. So say Martin singing a couple of songs. So, yeah. And he'll say, yes, yes, yes.
Does he ever say no?
No. No, he's kind of... he sees, I think, that it's an opportunity, and he's not going to say no unless something is complete. You know, if the equipment wasn't working right or something wasn't right, but, you know...
He's straight up there on stage. I'm looking forward to tonight so much. Are you looking forward to it?
Definitely, yeah.
Do you love it?
Night, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big night, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's great.
He's playing some music at the moment, so he's here.
Yeah, getting all geared up. And getting ready, he's getting all spruced up, having a wash and nice clothes. Oh, he's getting all geared up.
Be all spruced up for the night.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it? So we're going to meet Yvonne tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, meeting at 10. And what's going to happen there? How often do you meet Yvonne?
Every 2 weeks.
Okay.
For an hour.
Mm-hmm. And what's the purpose of that meeting, sir?
Anything that I bring up at all.
Okay.
But some of it, she has ideas about social skills and administrative skills, where she can see a deficit in my own skills that she wants to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mostly what I bring up.
Okay. And how long have you been seeing Yvonne?
working since with I Yvonne. Started there, so 4 years. Maybe.
4 years, so she's a key part in the whole
movement.
Yeah. Have you seen a big difference since Stuart started working with Yvonne?
Having a key worker? Yeah, since she started working with us, it's been very significant. The structure and also having somebody else to put that, who knows about things, to put that structure and to keep moving forward, you know, when there's steps back and there's support there, so when things go a bit pear-shaped,
someone to talk
there,
to.
And I can pick up the phone and say, look, you know, not great at the moment.
That's great.
So it's actually very useful.
Is it therapy, would you call the whole thing?
Not with Yvonne.
No.
Yvonne is planning and meeting goals.
That's what I mean, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work to keep well.
Oh, right, so there's a good structure there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good.
It's the only counselling you've had that's actually useful.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Fine,
are you ready
you?
For your appointment?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. It's not far, sure it isn't, sure.
No, it's 5 minutes with a fast walk.
Yeah.
About seven with a nice gentle stroll.
When was the last time you were out of the house? You don't like leaving?
Probably Tuesday last week when I saw Yvonne.
Really?
Yes.
Oh. You need to get out a bit more, don't you? Sure, that's one of your goals.
Yes, it is.
But you're okay walking with me now?
I'm fine walking with somebody.
Yeah?
Yeah, as long as I have... I know of somebody who's got a support chameleon. And the chameleon is actually provided by the health authority in California. And she says it deflects the social pressure.
Somebody just chats away, tells a few
so
jokes,
she has
lightens the...
A live chameleon on her shoulder. And it's cheap. It's expensive. You're my support comedian for the
Thank
moment.
You, sir. I've always wanted to be a support comedian.
I'd love to have a little potbelly pig.
What about a dog?
Or a dog?
I mean, you know all the assistance dogs.
Yes.
Would you not apply for one of those?
Oh, no, I don't think I would need...
You don't need... But even just dog. To get you out more?
I think any dog would be sufficient for me.
Well, would you get one, do you think?
It takes so much work.
Yeah.
We have a cat.
But you're so organised, you'd be good at that.
Himself.
You'd have all, I could imagine you'd make all these electronic feeders and you'd time and you'd weigh the food and you'd probably get very into making sure that the dog had X amounts of steps every day, wouldn't you?
Oh, you'd put one of those activity trackers.
You'd have an activity band on the dog as well.
So cross here and go.
So it's quite a busy road, so if you were on your own...
It is a very busy road, yes.
If you were on your own,
would it
be...
I'm not worried about the traffic, it's the people that...
Is it?
It's the unexpectedness of what happens if somebody stops me and I don't know what to say.
Oh, but it's not...
When I go shopping, I have a script in my mind of what I'm going to ask for and how I'm going to say it. And then the shopkeeper says something...
Are we going this way or that way?
Straight across there.
Oh, okay.
And the shopkeeper says something I don't expect... And it throws me completely.
You're stumped? Really?
And it might be just a comment about the weather or politics or what's in the front page. I feel like I've done something wrong.
It's very difficult.
And it's very irrational,
it?
But I know it's irrational.
Yeah, that's. Because you can't predict
any
of that. You can't predict what somebody's going to say to you.
No, and I go to the same shop every day and they're really nice to me, but. Even so, they still say things that I don't expect, and they should do. They shouldn't.
But they wouldn't know anything about you, would you? They just think he's the quiet guy, whatever, up the street. Oh. So we're going in here to meet Yvonne, and Yvonne is your?
Support.
Your support.
Key worker. Yeah.
Key worker. Yeah. And you meet her every?
Every fortnight or so.
Every fortnight. So do you look forward to these meetings?
I do, yes. I find them very helpful. And the whole... defining objectives and making a goal plan and sticking to it or not sticking to it.
Is she your friend or is it solely just like do you develop
I would say yes.
Yeah that's nice, because you've been seeing Yvonne for how long? 4 years, isn't
four
it
years.
So you want to keep Yvonne, don't you? You want to see her every 2 weeks.
Oh,
you want to keep that going. Yeah, how long would you see that happening for, Stuart?
Oh, I have no idea.
A long time.
It certainly takes a lot of pressure off the family, because I suppose they've always done that for me.
Yeah.
I'm not known.
So it's not therapy.
We're in here up the stairs. It's not therapy. It's support to be autonomous and independent for adults.
Okay. Autonomous, independent living for adults.
Yeah.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hello, I'm Alison.
Nice
how are you?
Alison, is it?
Alison, yeah. So, Stuart, how has this week been?
This week, mostly all right. I was looking at my activity tracking.
Okay. So, and we spoke about that the last time we met. Okay, so...
I have the...
So did you look at the week overview or the month overview?
The month, I've been out 7 times. So it's a big improvement, but it's still not good enough.
Let's go back to when you first got the activity tracker and you were doing so well.
And I was so enthusiastic.
You were
about
so
the
enthusiastic and you kept showing it to me.
Okay. Yes.
But I suppose think back to that. That was what, last September? Last October?
September. Yes.
Okay. And then you stopped going out. So when did it all start going downhill?
Christmas.
Okay. So if we look at that, what were the reasons why?
Christmas.
Okay. So was it...
Christmas is always hard. I think all of that... I know they're doing good, but charity collectors approaching me and the shopping and the lights and the smells and the...
Okay.
I find it very hard to be out in that. I want to go and quiz some retail managers to say, why do you make your shops like this? Because I talked about this in lectures, and a lot of the students, they say, I hate it. And I'm thinking, why do you do it? But presumably, retail managers are choosing to make shops like that because it sells more things.
From there, you could lead on to the restaurants that you were talking about, and the idea of there being a list of restaurants, of AS-friendly restaurants, where people could go.
Yes, I've been round with my sound meter.
And?
Measuring the noise levels in restaurants, and I have my list.
Okay. You haven't been thrown out of any, have you?
I haven't been.
Have they realised what you're doing?
They were very suspicious in the boots, and they sent a security guard to look at what I was doing.
Okay. Don't get yourself into trouble.
I was measuring the piped-in noise levels inside and outside the shop door, and they thought it was very odd, somebody standing there with a phone. I don't suppose they saw that it was... acting as a sound meter, but measuring the sound level inside the shop and then stepping outside and measuring it outside the shop.
Okay. We need to look at pleasurable activities as well.
No, I want to write another book, but I haven't decided. Should I do something that continues the same style and structure, or should I do something completely different?
You know, when we...
Because there's no money in what I'm doing.
No, so not really.
There's money in fiction if fiction becomes popular, but I don't think I have the...
Have you ever tried?
I wrote a whole novel and it's sitting there but I wouldn't
really?
Give it to anyone, yes.
And not even a first chapter, just to get an idea of some feedback from someone that you would trust?
I might do it. It was a long time ago, it's before I was diagnosed, but I might do. But it would be interesting to see what's in it, because it's actually about the distress of public spaces. And I wrote a whole novel based on the experience of going to this shopping centre and the terror, what are those nightmares? What's going to go wrong when you go into a shopping centre?
Have you read it since your diagnosis?
No, I haven't.
I think it would be interesting. We've never spoken about this book before, ever, in 6 years.
No, we've been talking about it. Would it be a statistics book or would it be a...
I think, you know, after you writing the one on Asperger's, living with Asperger's, I think we decided something different rather than, because you
and
were lecturing on Asperger's, writing
the,
on Asperger's.
The painted lorries, I think
I
it was such
fun.
A departure for me to do something artistic. And I really enjoyed putting that together. And it was a big challenge.
So maybe it's something we could look at and start with a small group. And it would also get you down that hill. And out of that house,
yes.
Which, you know, is the added bonus.
I used to go out and buy the paper.
Every day?
Every single day. And then I got in a huff with the papers and stopped buying them. I won't buy a newspaper anymore.
you know, it's more about the idea of going and having that interaction. Because, for example, if you stop going to the shop, like years ago, you know, we've had many discussions about, and I still love your expression of the spooky powers of normal people, and how I can go into a shop and I know what the shopkeeper is going to say, and I know how to respond to the shopkeeper. And I suppose you've often said in the past that that to you is something that
is quite unusual. I have my script in my head and then they don't speak their lines properly.
Okay.
And it's just, it's not fair. And I wonder how other people have all the different scripts of all the different things that might ever happen.
The weather is always hidden there. Always.
But when I try to do the weather, it doesn't work. And they think I'm being odd. But the anxiety grows and it's got back to being almost panic attack.
And we need to go back on that.
In the newsagent, they moved my new scientist from one side of the aisle to the other side, and I couldn't see it there, and I had to just leave the shop and go home and calm myself and come back the next day knowing it wasn't where I was going to look for it.
Did you and prep yourself, though, Stuart?
No, I'm a 50-whatever-year-old man and I can't buy a magazine and I feel useless.
You removed yourself from the situation. You prepped yourself. The next time I go down there, it's not going to be in the space that I thought it was going to be. It's going to be somewhere different. Look at the skills that you've used to do that. Mm. Anyone else could have said, I'm not going back there. That place, I'm not happy to go back there. It's not the way I wanted it to be.
I've gone through my entire life thinking shopkeepers hate me. And Gardaí hate me. And security guards hate
So was that the upside of getting a diagnosis?
It is, definitely. To understand that it's not personally motivated.
Mm-hmm.
That, and also to understand that it's internal. That mm-hmm. I go out and I feel bad. And it's internal. It's my body physiologically telling me I'm aroused and ready to flee or fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nothing that they've done.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I haven't seen what I expected and I'm not ready for it, and then I feel bad, and then I blamed it on them. Krista was saying this just yesterday, that it is hard work to stay healthy, mentally healthy.
So, you know, it's very, very different, but generally, yeah, I suppose anxiety, and I do think a lot of the anxiety comes from social anxiety, but social imagination and expectations.
And actually, this is something we've been discussing on the course a lot, about whether anxiety should be a core feature of the autism diagnosis.
That's an interesting one, yeah.
Because it seems to be such a common experience.
Maybe 70% would suffer from some form of anxiety of our clients, and maybe even higher.
So that mental ill health isn't something that's genetically comorbid. It's not something that autism doesn't make you mentally ill, but living with autism, the social consequences of autism make people mentally ill.
So what about the future, guys? All the dark days are well and truly over now.
Hopefully.
Let's see. Well, yeah. Could it be any worse than it was? It was pretty bad, wasn't it?
I don't know.
I don't think so. No, it couldn't be. So you've had, 5, 6, 7 years of living with autism now as a diagnosis?
And without being hospitalised.
Without being hospitalised and all the bumping around. So it's really good, isn't it?
Mostly, yes.
Mm. Have you settled into it?
I've kind of settled into it, but I think there's more to go on the road.
So what's it like being an adult with autism, Stuart?
Well, I'm the same adult I've always been.
Yeah.
I like the use of the word adult.
I don't feel like an adult. Everybody calls me the 4-year-old.
The 4-year-old?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The kids call me the 4-year-old.
Well, maybe I should ask Krista.
Yeah. Krista calls me the 4-year-old.
Yeah. What's it like living? That's probably a better tactic. What's it like living with an adult with autism?
It's an interesting mix, actually, because some of the some of the behaviours are very
mature.
very mature. You're, you know, you're extremely good at what you do. But then it's, you know, if you're going out in the rain to fix my car, please put your shoes on.
Put out the bins.
Put out the bins. You can't go down the hill. It might be glass. Seriously. So it's a mix. The other interesting thing, which I really like, is that there's no mind games. If Stuart says something, then that's what he means to say. Mm. It's not, what do you mean by that? You know, is he annoyed with me? There's none of that. So it's very.
What you see is what you get.
It's very refreshing, and it's very clear where you are.
If you look at, and my favourite one is a step in an old church or an old courthouse or some old building that has a stone step. There's a curve worn into the step where most people walked up the middle and some people walked towards the edges, and it wears a curve, which is the shape that one finds in nature. And there's nothing abnormal about walking up the edges. We're not, and people call it the extremes. And some people walk up the edges because they need to hold on to the wall.
That's a lovely analogy.
And I show this photograph in class and I said, that is the normal distribution. And every part of it is normal because it's the distribution that's normal.
But the majority of people are going to walk up the middle.
Yeah.
But Stuart Nielsen's walking up the side.
And some other person might be walking up the other side, completely different from me. And they're all part of that normal.
Sure, halfway in, or we may as well keep going.
I'm so shocked that you are.
Hello, Robert. Sorry, hiya. I'm Alison.
Alison, nice to meet you, Alison. Hiya, Martin.
You had this man at
Yeah, good to meet you again, buddy. It's great to have you here tonight, man. Fair play to you. You're going to sing a song for us tonight? Yeah, how are you? How are you? Nice to meet you again.
Nice to meet you.
How are you keeping?
This is John and Norma. You met
Yes, we met.
Year.
I met them before in down in Listenvarna. That's right. And Martin was up singing. Geez, he done a great job. I tell you one thing. I'm glad I'm on the road 20 years. You do me out of work.
Well, this man has been so excited. I can't tell you, Robert. Yeah. We had photographs beside the truck.
Oh, did you?
And then he brings them home, doesn't he, folks?
Oh,
and
he's
he looks
brilliant.
At them, and he just can't wait. You're so
well,
good.
Well,
to
well that well that night in Listenvarna, that was amazing because I had never met Martin before. You see, I didn't know how you sang, Martin. But Jesus, I tell you one thing, he's well able to sing.
Yeah.
He's a good man.
What do you think of his singing?
Oh, look, it's fantastic, and you know, it's hard enough to get up on stage. I'm doing it 20 years, and it still makes it difficult for me. But Martin hopped up there, and you'd swear he was doing it all his life, and, you know. And it was fantastic. It's great.
Oh, well, you've made this young man's.
Oh, and I'm glad to have him here tonight. We're gonna really enjoy it. So, and I know that the people as well are just going to go mad for him. You know, they're.
You know, Martin can't really speak at all.
No, I know that. I know that, and that's what
Isn't
amazed
it
me. That's what amazed me when I heard that Martin didn't speak. But then when the music starts, like it just something transforms in his brain that he just knows instinctively. And I think that's the great thing about music, because it speaks to a different part of the brain than every other influence, you know. So it's great now. It's great. He's a credit.
Thank you so much for having us backstage, and you've made this.
No bother.
It's a great achievement for Martin. It's wonderful for him to be asked up and to be stood beside Robert Mazzella and the country king.
Anytime, I'm honoured.
You're his hero, you know that.
Well, I'm honoured anytime. You're always welcome here, Martin. You're always welcome here.
Oh, you're so good.
No bother. No bother. No bother at all. Thank you very much. Sorry, we didn't bring you to a nicer.
This is the
glamorous side of the business, you know.
Thank you so much.
No problem, Martin. We'll see you later on, guys. I'm going to call Martin up about an hour into the show. Is that okay?
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's great to be with you here on the Easter Sunday night. We got lots of music for you. Here's your first old time waltz. One from Alan Jackson called I Wear My Old Country Hat. Oh, yeah.
His music.
music has really brought you three on a journey, hasn't it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
An amazing journey, really, isn't
yeah.
it? Because for a young man who can't speak, but still he's able to sing, and that's how he communicates.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of, it's created opportunities for Martin. You know, if he gets up on stage, he's asked to sing. He probably feels in his own little mind that he's serving a purpose, and he's doing what other people are doing.
I need a moment of your time because I want to introduce to you a very, very special guest. And I will tell you, and I'm proud to say to you, this young man has autism. This young man does not speak a word. But believe me, when the music starts and when you hear this guy sing, you're going to be so proud as I was the very first time I got a chance to hear him sing. He's not too far away from here, and his parents are here with him tonight, and I want to thank him for bringing Martin back. But we were just amazed by him down in this environment. Some of you might have seen him down there, we were down for a weekend. But he's going to come up and he's going to sing a little song for you now. And I want you to put your hands together for Mr. Martin Finn, ladies and gentlemen. Come on here. Now, bearing in mind, this guy, Martin doesn't speak a word, but he can sing like nobody I've heard before. So here he is. Martin, you do your best, what you can do best, man. Give me your house for a song.
Thank you.
ladies and gentlemen, didn't I tell you this was a very special young man? I don't think you'll get a chance to see this man enough. So we're going to do one more song. Martin, thank you so much. And yes, God bless you.
Look at me, I'm so happy as any man could be. Cause I'm just a simple hug, love's all that matters to me. You can fly through the moon or sail me across the seven sea. But I'm telling you something, love's all that matters to me.
What would, where would you be, you know, if his talent hadn't been discovered?
Well, I'd say with Martin, his life would be very empty. But maybe some people might say, well, he might have linked into other hobbies.
Mm.
But
you think he would have?
I doubt it somehow, because we've taken him to so many different places, you know, being young. We've tried so many different things. And we always came to discover at the end of the day, if he had 5 minutes of music, that was 5 minutes, that was the best part of the day then.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if he had a day with no music, I think he'd have a bad day at night.
Really?
Yeah.
No music.
If he wasn't doing that, he'd be just roaming around and he'd be kind of feel a bit lost, I suppose, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas he feels every so often now that he's doing the very same that these other professions are doing.
Really?
So it makes him feel good in his own little way.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the morning after the big night. Good morning.
Good morning,
Alistair.
Yeah, it was a big night, huh?
Oh, it was fantastic.
It was really, really enjoyable. No, for Martin, it was a huge night for Martin. For him to be asked up to sing with Robert Mazzello is really marvellous.
So, John, I'm going to head off, and I've had a great weekend. But you guys are actually going to stay another night.
We'll have to stick on for another night or so.
You will be wrecked. That son of yours is going to have you absolutely.
We'll have a rest when we get back down.
Will you get a rest?
Yeah.
Though? You'll need it, won't you?
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me tag along for the few days.
Thank you ever so much, Alison. Thank you.
I learned a lot, and I really enjoyed my time with Martin. And I think he probably thinks I'm okay. He let me sit beside him and stuff, and in the car.
No problem as well. No problem.
I'm in. That's good. We'll see you, John. Take care.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I will never see anything you wanted me to, and I can't see me without you. I see the house you once called our home, and I see the door you walked through. I see the road you're leaving me on, and I can't see me without you. I can't see me without you to lean on.
The Moon is an Orange Triangle 3 is a Real Films production and was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
I could never see anything you wanted me to, and I can't see me without you.